Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. It is the 29th day of September 2016, the next to the last day of September. We are running downhill to beat the Swede here at the Horn, and we've got a little over $200 to raise this evening. And in the ongoing effort to garner $1 contribution sufficient to meet Larry's challenge from several weeks ago that's taken the month to complete. Remember, Larry wanted 333 $1 contributions in order to qualify for a doubling of the same, so he could gladly pony up $666. What a wonderful number that is. It just drives people crazy. I told you the story once, didn't I, about going through the Dairy Queen drive-thru and ordering a medium blizzard. We call it an Elvis. It's peanut butter, banana, and chocolate. It was a medium orange Julius and something, maybe. But it all came to $666. And I went through one day and placed the order, and it was $666. And the next time I went through, it was $667, because the girl at the, and she was a girl, not a full-grown woman, but the girl at the cash register had rounded up, because whenever she told somebody here $666, they went, and so she just got in the habit of rounding it up to $667 so people wouldn't freak out. But anyway, we'll qualify for $666 if we get about 61, 62, I think, $1 contributions between now and tomorrow, which is awesome. Very awesome. And that happens over at PayPal, because it's really not worth a stamp. You get the idea. Costs less to do the dollar at PayPal than it does to send with a stamp. So we got that, but apart from that, you know, the regular $200 an evening to raise, one at $200, two at $104, $50, eight at $25, 16 at $12.50, 32 at $6.25, and 64 at $3.13, and we round up, but not out of any sort of religious paranoia. It is the 29th day of September, and I want to take the beginning of the program to mark something momentous. It is the 76th birthday of one of my dearest friends. It is the 76th birthday today of Dr. Bill O'Brien, from whom I have learned so very much. And I hope he has had a wonderful day. Go by his Facebook page and wish him happy birthday. He'd be absolutely tickled pink if you would do that. Just look him up on Facebook. Heck, become a friend of his. Or go to the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility Facebook page and wish him happy birthday. I guarantee you, because he absolutely loves to interact with members of the Horn family community. Congregation. Happy birthday, Dr. Bill O'Brien. So that takes care of a lot of the basics. Hopefully, we'll raise $200 this evening and $200 tomorrow, and the Swede will be beaten for the ninth month in a row, which is awesome. I had occasion today. Okay, so that takes us down by... Thank you, Thomas. That takes us down... we got to fool around with the loose change again. So the fundraising goal is now $193.33. $193.33. My ciphering and gazettas are a little slow right now. Thank you, Thomas, over at FYINation.com. Thank you very kindly. As Brother Usher Steve says in New York, $666. Dare I say it'd be huge? It would be huge, without a doubt. So here's the thing. And this is one of those moments where the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas stand, her input would be very, very helpful. I don't know if she's... I don't know if she's tied up or anything, but if she's not, I'd love to have her input. You know, there are people out there who earn things like MBAs and whatnot, they live and die and breathe and excrete and the word productivity. Well, and a lot of that is just BS MBA speak for squeezing more work out of more people for less money. And along the way, in our consumer capitalist culture, predatory that it is, squeezing more people for more money for less service. And I have today and in the last couple of weeks experienced what I've come to realize is sort of the reason that corporate America sucks. Because corporate America does suck. A lot. Just sucks. And that's this. They're so upset. They're so obsessed with what happens at the 92nd decimal place, because that's where the money is. The whole idea, their whole raison d'être, the idea of being in business and selling a product and goes out the window. A couple of weeks ago, it was Frontier. And I don't know, maybe it's no mistake that both of these examples come from the world of telecommunications. Now, it's Verizon. So, here's the backstory. Because our ordinary internet service provider goes down from time to time, and when they go down, Frontier, they stay down for a considerable period of time, I try to have something working on backup, even though it's metered bandwidth, that I can use to get a program and a rerun stream out. This becomes horrifyingly expensive, by the way. And so I maintain two separate accounts with two separate cell providers. One is really, really good around here, and the other, Verizon, is considerably better elsewhere. So, because I'm kind of a gadget head, and because I envision uses for things that other devices don't necessarily do, I ran out and got the Samsung Galaxy Note 7, which I later came to refer to as the Explode-a-Note. Oh, damn, thanks for reminding me. I haven't told anybody how to vote yet. See, well, No, don't tell people how to vote, Bob. Stop telling me how to vote. Okay, that's out of the way, right? And so it turns out that, yes, it's the explode-a-note, and the thing is prone to blowing up catastrophically. And so, at first, Samsung issued a voluntary recall, hoping to minimize the damage both from a PR and a financial standpoint. Just bring your note, bring it in, you know, we'll replace it, no problem, aren't we a lovely global corporate citizen? Only it didn't work out quite so well. So then, they finally knuckled under and had to start dealing with the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission. Because, see, that's one of those job-killing regulatory agencies that tries to keep, you know, children from getting killed, houses from burning down, and phones from blowing up in people's faces. Which is, you know, funny in a Bugs Bunny cartoon, not so funny in reality. Da-de-da-de-da-da-da-da. No, you stupid rabbit. Right. So, here's how it plays out. Weeks ago, the recall was issued on this thing. Okay. So I go and say, hey, you have any recall phones? Nope, sorry. A couple of weeks go by. Finally, they've got a replacement phone. I go to replace it. Sorry. Your bill has to be current. In other words, you've got to have a zero balance. Now, this is not to say that the phone is turned off or that anything's overdue. It's not. But if you've got a balance, they won't replace the phone, even though there is a formal federal government Consumer Product Safety Commission and manufacturer recall on the device. And even if you try to power it up, it says, turn this goddamn phone off now and take it to the store. This thing is dangerous. Get it away from yourself. So you do that. And the fine folks at Verizon say, ha-ha, no, sorry. Ain't gonna happen. No, Marty, my exploded note has not exploded yet. But I'm not willing to sit around and wait for it to. Now, according to the terms of the recall, you're supposed to be able to walk in and either get a replacement or a refund immediately. As in, no questions asked. Oh, Stockton Larry, you're betting a million tonight. Bob, stop telling us how to phone! Yeah, I know. But that's not how it works. And it turns out, because once I ran down and read the feed and stuff, let's say you're with another carrier, well, and you want to do a complete refund, they will not refund the activation fee. And you have to fight with them over whether or not, over just getting rid of the account altogether and going back to whatever square one you were at when you started the process. And this is kind of the heart and soul of the crummy, crappy, penny-pinching, penurious nature of corporate America. You've got a mandatory recall with a no-questions-asked requirement. And corporate America refuses to honor it. Now, down the road, remember last night when we were talking about the Saudis and we were talking about the veto of the and the override of the veto and how crafty plaintiffs' lawyers are? Somewhere out there, right now, even as we speak, there's a law firm that specializes in class action lawsuits. And they're working on the class action lawsuit that they will eventually file against Samsung and all the cell carriers who participated in the sale of the Explodenote. And every time that one of these cell carriers acts like it is being personally offended by simply fulfilling the terms of the recall, you know, the ante goes up by $100 in that future class action lawsuit. And by the time you multiply that by a million or so, you're dealing with some real walking around money. And it seems like this just sort of encapsulates corporate conduct in the United States. Or at least corporate conduct in terms of telecommunications, which is supposed to be the absolute cutting edge, leading edge of technology, advancement. And instead, it's the absolute epitome of bullshit, petty, Scrooge and Marley penny pinching. I mean, I'm not particularly pissed off about this situation. This isn't about anger. This is about not doing things that make your own corporate existence worse than it has to be. Because that's exactly what's going on here. And yes, because of the nature of how I view human existence, i.e., you know, you get one, you buy your ticket, you take the ride, and when the ride's over, and there's you don't get to be a ghost and ride on the ghost roller coaster. This is it. So for however long, and, you know, first world problems, believe me, I know. I doubt if there's anybody sitting in Aleppo right now worrying about their Galaxy phone. Without a doubt. But all of these little things, and I think about it because I spent hours on the phone with Frontier Communications trying to just get the internet back up and running. And as sure as God made little green apples, and if you eat too many of them, you'll get a bellyache in the runs, I'll spend hours on the phone with Verizon. And then there'll be the time spent filing the report with the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. And I'm not going to, and I, nor you, nor anybody else who goes through these processes is going to get any of that back. Not even in some paltry penny ante sort of, there's that phrase again, monetary compensation. Because even in the case of, I mean, the whole reason for class action suits is to enrich the lawyers. And what the actual class gets in terms of money is negligible. So, you know, I feel like I'm having something stolen from me. Does it feel that way to you? When you have to spend time on hold and then talking to a consumer relations specialist whose entire script consists of, I understand, and I deeply regret. Because that's the first thing they teach them in the call center. Okay, you're going to do a lot of apologizing here, all right? I don't care if they're screaming. I don't care if they're nice. I don't care if they're Minnesota nice. You're going to apologize a lot. But here's the thing. the consumer relations specialist isn't apologizing for her conduct. She's apologizing for the conduct of some asshole chief financial officer who never, ever, ever feels the brunt of their own actions. This all sort of dovetails with something Robert Reich wrote, and I was kind of proud to read this because, hi, Bob. He wrote this after a week or so later, after I had been talking about the same thing. Remember when we had the clip of, I can't remember, was it Heather Manchin Bresh, or was it that thief from Wells Fargo? And I said something along the lines of, the reason or not the reason, but the trade-off, you know, so you're Heather Manchin Bresh and you give yourself a $12 million a year raise, or, you know, $16 million a year raise, maybe. And then, you know, at some point in time when you get caught being a predator, you have to answer a summons to the Congress, and you sit there, and senators, some more sincere than others, and members of the House of Representatives, some more sincere than others, give you a good tongue-lashing. And if you're Heather Manchin Bresh, you walk out of the hearing room, and there's Daddy Joe, and Heather's kind of, you know, she's tearing up a little bit, and she, oh, Daddy! It was awful. Daddy hands her his hanky. Maybe it's from the Trump collection. And she sniffles into it a little bit, and he holds her to his shoulder, and her head's on his shoulder, and he pats her a little bit and strokes the back of her hair and says, "There, there. Who's Daddy's girl? Who's Daddy's girl?" And Heather Manchin Bresh says, "Heather is. That's right. My Heather is." And she sniffles a little bit, and she steps back, and she looks at Daddy Joe, and he says, "Baby?" "Yes, Daddy." "Did the check clear?" "Yes, Daddy." "Yes, Daddy. The check did clear." And Joe Manchin says, "See? All better now." And Heather looks at him and says, "Best daddy in the world." And then, yes, as Stockton Larry points out in the chat room, and then Heather cried all the way to the Wells Fargo bank. And that's it. Nothing happens after that. There's no orange jumpsuit. There's no orange plastic shower shoes and white socks. There's no hands behind the back. There's no perp walk. It's just another great day to be Heather Manchin Bresh, or that economic thug from Wells Fargo. But lo and behold, Robert Reich, shortly after all that, said, "Can we be clear? CEOs have only one goal in mind, making money. If they can make more money by misleading or price gouging, they'll continue to do so until it's no longer profitable. For years, we've watched Congress grill CEOs of Wall Street banks about bank fraud. If it's not John Stumpf's sham accounts, it's J.P. Morgan Chase's Jamie Dimon, whose bank failed to report trading losses. Remember the London Whale? Or it's Goldman Sachs's Lloyd Blankfein, whose bank defrauded investors. Why should we expect Wells Fargo or any other big bank to stop such frauds when they're so lucrative?" Republicans may rage at the CEOs who appear before them, but they haven't given the Justice Department enough funding to pursue criminal charges against corporations and executives who violate the law. Meanwhile, Congress has allowed Wall Street banks and pharmaceutical companies to accumulate vast market power that invites wrongdoing. Congress has made it illegal for Americans to shop at foreign pharmacies for cheaper versions of the same drugs sold in the U.S. and hasn't appropriated the Food and Drug Administration enough funds to get competing versions of life-saving drugs to market quickly. So instead of setting up further rounds of CEO perp walks for the TV cameras, Congress should give the Justice Department and regulatory agencies enough funding to do their jobs. While they're at it, break up the biggest banks and regulate drug prices directly, as does every other country. It's easy to holler at CEOs. It's time to stop hollering and take action. Because that's about the only hope there is actual lawmaking type action. Because it's not just Verizon, it's AT&T. It's not just Verizon and AT&T, it's Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint, and T-Mobile. And they're all shit weasels. And all that business about the market solving problems is crap. When every single, look, okay, the market is, that ethereal concept is based on a concrete notion, you know, little stalls or in earlier days, people just with blankets laid out on the ground and the stuff that they've grown on their, in their garden plots laid out before you for, right. You know, one guy's got rice and over here's a woman weaving baskets and if her baskets suck, you can go and find somebody who doesn't make a sucky basket. But with giant American corporations, there are no sucky basket weavers. They all bite. And so consequently, the free market notions, which are held onto with almost religious fervor by the right wing, that attend capitalism are crap. Steve pointing out, not to put too fine a point on it, it shows corporations and not the government are the real power in this country. Well, when they can act with impunity in the market and the market is powerless against them, I guess that's the truth. And so we find ourselves asking, what's the remedy? And there it is from Robert Reich. Congress needs to do its job, but once again, we've got a Congress that's in the clutches of people who don't even like the idea of government. Frustrating, no? Frustrating, yes. Oh, and by the way, the note from FYI Nation said, Satan says hi and happy birthday, Dr. Bill, from FYI Nation. Thanks, guys. And thanks, Randy, for jumping in. Let's see, we were at 193.33, so we're at 143.33, and we've got a fighting chance this evening. We got a fighting chance. Steve also noted, subject line, explode a note. Say what you want about Apple, but this is one of the reasons why Apple stores are really good things. You know, I wish we could have an Apple store in West Virginia. You realize there's not even one? Hey, there's that market thingy again. How come there is not one single Apple store in the entire state of West Virginia? I mean, do the folks out there in Cupertino just assume that the dumbass hillbillies can't afford their really expensive wares? I don't know. But I can think of a couple places that an Apple store would probably do really well. Right across the river in Fayetteville is one of them. all the tourists coming through and everything. Yeah, right. Worth thinking about. And Marty says, well, if they won't exchange, it's time for the refund. Sorry, no. I sat there and explored every possibility. And they simply will not have nothing. So, yeah, tomorrow, because it was too late today, I'll dial 611 and get some extremely apologetic person working a call center God knows where at Verizon, and I'll explain to them that I am frittering away my life trying to solve this problem. And they'll apologize and apologize and apologize. And in the end, they'll tell me they're very, very sorry that they are very, very unable to help me do anything about it. And then we'll escalate. And that'll take another hour. And I'll talk to some mid-level call center employee. And that'll go nowhere. And then we'll escalate again. And eventually, because the system is set up in such a way as to wear you down and make you simply throw your hands up in despair before you ever get relief, eventually I will, with dogged determination and having had some significant portion of my life stolen from me, because it is a finite quantity. It's a finite unknown quantity. Not just for me, but for you, for everybody. And when the thing you're talking about is something that doesn't even need to happen in the first place, that could have been solved inside of 2 minutes' time? How is that anything but theft of life? You know, because I learned a long time ago not to try to bet to an inside straight. And betting that this will all be made good on the back end after they've shoveled some goddamn dirt over me. No, I'm not taking that wager. Mm-mm. Not gonna. Randy reminds me, in major markets, Apple stores are generally located at malls. We have malls in West Virginia. We've got some nice ones. But, no. None. Zip. Zilch. Nada. In the far and soon-to-be frosty north, Ron says, no Apple store? Bill Cole couldn't get the franchise? Apparently he's not that interested. I mean, here in West Virginia, we're happy just to peck away on our on our Windows devices with our little toes. Yes. So that's how that goes. Writing from Oz, up over, down under. Our buddy Robert says, about 3 years ago, my internet connection went down. My landline telephone went down at the same time, which meant it was probably a cable problem. I drove up to the local mall to access free Wi-Fi so I could send my internet supplier an email about the problem and to request help. I drove up to the local mall the next day to check my email. My internet supplier replied with an email asking me to phone them. I replied saying my landline was dead and that I did not have a mobile. Please send someone to fix it. You know where this is going, right? My internet supplier replied with an email asking me to phone them. This went on for about 5 days. Until it clicked with my internet supplier that I wasn't going to phone them. They sent out an engineer. My ancient copper wire connection in the main switch box on the side of the building had turned green and blown away. The engineer reconnected the wires and I was up and running. It took all of 5 minutes. No refund for the 5 days with no connection because they don't own the phone lines. Meanwhile, still no sign of the national broadband network in my area, 3 years after the Liberal government promised to deliver it cheaper and faster. Remember, in Australia, the Liberal government is actually the right-wing Conservative government. Last I heard, the cost had blown out by a few billion, and the Liberal Party copper wire version was slower than ADSL2, maybe by 2020. Signed, Robert in Oz. Another case of the American disease metastasizing all the way across the Pacific Ocean. Yes, I think you're probably right, Dogman. Apple doesn't want your filthy coal money. No. So, just a little something, because I don't know if you think like I do. Stop telling us how to think! But I see connections between everyday, ordinary daily life and the overarching macro world in which we live. It filters up, it filters down. But one of those things that I've had to teach my kids is that, because, I mean, they're polite, and Ferg would rather have somebody stomp his foot than send a meal back at a restaurant, even if they screw it up. Even if they, let's say he orders chicken and they bring him tofu. No, he'll happily eat it. I'm like, you can't do that, son. You can't do that. I knew this stuff would start. Ron and Raleigh, may I suggest, Apple is a fucking cult. If you like this bunch of proprietary thieves, then may I interest you in a membership in the Church of Scientology? I just like stuff that works and doesn't blow up. Ah, okay. Another note from a member of the Fraternity of Steve. Subject line, Daddy Warbucks Bucks. Bob, sounds to me like you're just talking about corporate aristocracy. CEOs don't have telephones, Bob. They hire butlers. And when's the last time you or me took an air taxi to work, or any sort of taxi? True enough. True enough. And, you know, unlike, and look, I mean, it's just reality. I'm not being mean, but it's only fair to mention it. The international heads of unions being picked up by, you know, who get picked up by a limo every day. No, that doesn't happen for me either. The rich are very different from you and me. Fitzgerald was right, and it drove him to drink. No, that was Zelda. Oh, I'll get email for that, too. Zelda was the brains of the outfit. Stop telling us how to read Faulkner, Bob! So, there we go. And, oh dear. Again with the ciphering. Thank you, Laurel. Where were we? Let's see, 193. And so, 133.66. 133. 119 bucks! $119 to go. Thank you very kindly to Glenn and Laurel. That's not bad at all. Oh dear, we're going to start the great Apple versus the rest of the world cult argument now. Ron in the far frosty north. A finite quantity of life, Shaw. I'm real confident my best before date is March 15th, 2117. I'd prefer longer, but it is what it is. At two, y'all. I'm on year 7 with my MacBook Air. It's never frozen. I've never seen the blue screen of death. And the only issue I've ever had was the need to replace the battery after 6.5 years. $180, including service charges. Yeah, see, that's the thing. And, well, I mean, bear in mind, every machine, all but one machine in here, is a Windows machine. And, you know, there's a problem with one of them just about every week. But it's like doing crossword puzzles. It keeps your mind active. It also keeps your swearing vocabulary up to date. Yep, we're well underway now. You know what? This will drive a bigger wedge into a progressive community than anything short of 9/11. The Apple discussion. I'll get some sort of snarky tweet from Isaac if I haven't already. Bunch of sheep. Scott, translating for Punky in San Diego, says, in defense of Apple and their products, I've owned an Apple Mac in one form or another since the first one debuted in 1984. Apple makes well-thought-out products that perform well and look great. Nobody's ever said that about Microsoft Windows or the many computers that run it. No, they really haven't. But I did catch an art of word-knowing problem with Apple the other day. And I got a big giggle out of it, too. Because, you know, the art of word-knowing is something that means a lot to me. And when the art of word-knowing fails, it tends to fail spectacularly. Let's see. Let me find it here. When the last update came out, the iOS 10.0.2, in describing the update, someone who wrote the description that was sent out to millions upon millions of phones, if not a billion, who knows, describing iOS 10.0.2 said, now listen carefully, addresses an issue, because this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we don't necessarily have to talk about Donald Trump, okay? Damn it, I mentioned his name. Two more and he shows up in the studio. No, these language things are thorns in my side because, you know, I'm a jerk. Addresses an issue that could prevent headphone audio controls from temporarily not working. Let's read that in real time. Addresses an issue that could prevent headphone audio controls from temporarily not working. So, if you took iOS update 10.0.2, you can be assured that the issue that would prevent your headphone audio controls from temporarily not working has been solved, and now your audio controls will not work all the time. God, I love that. Yeah, Marty, you know, just jump right in. Marty says, what's this? An Apple versus thing, and I'm not involved? C'est la vie. Steve writes in from New York and says, happy member of the Apple cult. It works. If the fact that I like stuff that works, then I'm a happy member of the cult. When was the last time an Apple anything blew up en masse? Well, there are some battery issues right now. I mean, not with them blowing up or anything, but there are some battery issues. Your iPhone can be reading 72% battery 1 minute, and then you go to open your mail, and suddenly you're being told that your battery is down to 10%. And so you close your mail, and you plug it back up, and it shows that you've got 59%. This might get sorted out. One hopes. Question coming in for Robert in Australia, from Jen in Australia. Jen, are you in New South Wales or Queensland or can't remember, but Jen says, ask Robert, was it INET? They drive us nuts here, and that's NUTZ. Had a lovely note from Jen. I love these. I see these. She puts a lot of time into these, and they are a delight for me, and I hope a delight for you. A prediction, a fantasy suggestion to Hillary, and an idea for a challenge. My 1-2-3 punch challenge, says Jen, between now and the next debate between HRC and the bug, I'll keep track of all headlines specific to Trump threatening to attack Hillary over Bill's infidelity. When tallied up on the night of the debate, when someone donates $1.23 for each headline, $1.23, because I enjoy listening to Bob ciphering, damn you, Jen, I'll match the total. For the punch part of my challenge, see below. Okay. We'll see below. Meanwhile, a prediction and a fantasy suggestion to Hillary. Oh, this is going to be good. A fantasy suggestion. Please, Hillary, go into the second debate ripping into him before he opens his ass-shaped mouth. Rolling up your sleeves, say, okay, let's rumble, little Donnie. The Bill Monica thing is tame compared to you leaving your first and second wives between multiple affairs. Sidebar, if Giuliani can say she's unfit to be president for staying with Bill, why isn't Donnie unfit because he divorced twice? Hillary could continue, by the way, we can see you're easily confused, but I'm not Bill. You, however, are the man who betrayed and abandoned two women. But since you've established that we're responsible for our spouse's actions, are you accountable for Melanoma's past visa discrepancies and her recent plagiarism? Yeah, that would be fun. But you know what? But Jen, just, I know it's a fantasy, but my God, the for-profit media would have babies. They'd have babies with babies' arms coming out of their heads over something like that. Oh, my God, she wasn't very presidential. She stooped to his level. And, of course, all of that misogyny would be brought into the mix. If he insists on going after spouses, then Hillary must go after melanoma. Women's equality demands that she does. If Hillary's a fool for staying with Bill, then melanoma is a fool for knowingly marrying a cheating, lying sleaze sack. Then Hillary can wrap it up. Since you brought up infidelity, I've been married once to your three times so far. Is melanoma starting to get too old? Has she been caught eating? I imagine you have people keeping an eye on that. Oh, and did I mention only one of us on this stage has faced rape allegations? So you can make it quick, i.e. the Benghazi rant your handlers forced you to memorize so I can get on with reminding you that Trey Gowdy admitted the committee trumped up a non-existent conspiracy, and after 9 hearings paid for with tax dollars to which you contributed not a goddamn dime, and an 11-hour... I added the goddamn part, by the way. Jen doesn't talk like that. And an 11-hour-long interrogation, which took stamina you'll never find in whatever substance you're snorting, it was concluded that the events of that night were no more or less regrettable than the 13 attacks and 63 deaths at various embassies during the George W. Bush administration. So if you don't mind, I'd like to move on to discussing the people's business policies and issues, such as the brutal fact that in the third richest country on earth, 4 out of 5 children go to bed hungry. Now, a prediction. She'll tear him a new one in the second debate, and he'll refuse to attend the third, followed by a barrage of TV ads calling him a thin-skinned coward. If he can't stand up to a girl, how can he stand up to his buddy Putin? And if he's too lazy to show up for a 1.5-hour debate, can we expect him to show up for the presidency? Ah, I like that. But bear in mind, he has to show up for the third one, because the third debate is the money shot, because that's the one that gets all the recency in it, and that's the one being hosted by the guy who says he will never, ever, ever, he promises ever, 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 pinky swear, pinky promise, upon his honor, fact check, nobody, no how, unless it's Hillary Benghazi, Chris Wallace. Here's the punch part of Jen's challenge. If my fantasy turns to reality, and Hillary does come out swinging, if she takes her lady balls out of her purse and bitch slaps that ghoulish scumbag right out of the gate, having matched someone's $1.23 contributions, I'll double the total again in celebration. 1-2-3 punch. Headline count to date. Trump eyes attacking Clinton over husband's infidelity in next debate. Chelsea Clinton, Trump brings up Bill's infidelity because he can't talk about real issues. Eric Trump, it took courage for my dad to not mention Bill Clinton's infidelity. Trump allies ratchet up attacks over Bill Clinton's infidelities. I got a feeling that list is going to get considerably longer. Oh, and by the way, Robert, Jen is in Western Australia. Two more headlines, she says. Six so far. Trump threatens to attack Clinton's marriage. Chelsea Clinton has the perfect response. Thrice married adulterer Trump ready to attack Hillary over Bill's past infidelities. I got a couple more for you, Jen, if you're keeping track. You got something to write with? Because this is a Lulu. Come on. There we go. Let's see. There's the one where, oh, damn it. Well, where'd it go? I think it was, Kellyanne Conway, who said that, there's no problem with Trump's prior marriages because they're all friends. Yeah. Jake Tapper, meanwhile, said Trump is surrounded by a philanderer's club. Yeah, you're going to be busy, Jen. from the soon-to-be frosty north. You're getting some sympathy there, Robert and Jen. Ron notes, apparently Frontier Communications has branched out to Australia. Ron still hates Apple. If your PCs go down, you can afford to fix them. Apple's worked fine until they don't. $180 for a goddamn battery, which you can only get from Apple. No analog headphones for the new iPhone. An earpiece that costs $159, which you can only get from Apple. Fuck those greedy bastards. It's not entirely true, Ron. The new iPhones come with headphones that plug into the Lightning port. They just got rid of the 1/8-inch or 3.5-millimeter jack. But yeah, they still plug in. You don't have to spend, cause you don't have to, and you get a dongle too, so you can use your old cans in the new port. The biggest problem with that design element is that you can't charge and listen at the same time. That was one of the things that I liked about the Note 7 was that it had gone to the USB-C standard, which meant, you know, lightning fast data connections and the ability to use the USB 3 ports on your computer for bang, zip, done, fast. Yeah. Now, that's a good philosophical question. Robert, somewhere near Morgantown, says, will melanoma be possibly the third lady or the first lady twice removed? All right, we're sorting out Ron's now. In the soon-to-be-frosty North, Ron says, that must be the other Ron. From now on, since I'm obviously the older, less hip Ron of the Ron Triumvirate, you can refer to me as Ron Squared. You're Ron in the some aspect of being frozen North. And always will be. Yes. if we're referring to the Apple controversy... Marty says, do I need rum or grappa for the rest of the show? I'd go for grappa, the really cheap stuff, preferably. Oh, how sweet. Laurel says, the $14.67 I donated tonight was in honor of the 14 years and 8 months that I was blessed to spend with my late Chow Husky mix, K-10, the amazing Thunder Dog, who passed away from cancer 1 year ago today. I'd like to share my written tribute to him tonight on air. And if I'm lucky, Little Thunder will contribute to the conversation tonight as well. Nice. Very nice. Thank you, Laurel. Thank you very, very much. So, I hope for you, and it certainly was for me, that was an interesting hour of thorn in the side filibobstering. It was kind of refreshing not to talk exclusively about the Psycho Cheeto. Because it does get tiresome. Yeah, that's true. Randy pointing out, Hartman's program advertises for Credo Mobile, where you can still get an iPhone 6S. And Malloy is advertising for Credo now, too. And I like Credo. Credo was a huge help to us with the AIC Act and getting a lot of people on board supporting the AIC Act. And I will forever have a soft spot in my heart for Credo Mobile. It's just they don't really work here. Gotta have that rental agreement for those cell towers. And that's why I'm with one company for around here and another company for when I'm on the road. Meanwhile, on the dark side of the Apple world, Jen notes, my second Mac is shitting the bed as I type, the same way the first one did. Keyboard dies, then graphics card fries, and laptop becomes useless. It becomes the useless, blunt object with which one dreams of bludgeoning Tim Cook. I think it would all be different if Johnny Ive had just been given the number one spot. I also don't think that Johnny Ive must have known about that iOS 10.0.2 description, because he never would have let it get out the door. Do you even understand what it is you're saying? And because he brings such urbane British dialect sophistication to all of the Apple videos. And yes, our piano black phone has been micro-polished by 9 layers of micro-polishing gizmos that micro-polish it to a fine, 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 shiny finish that will display every fingerprint in the known universe. And, turns out, can be scratched by individual molecules of air. But it sounds so nice when he says it. Yeah, Marty, Sprint sucks around here. A lot. Meanwhile, John notes, the sad thing is that the profits from all the consumers are then used to bribe and deceive the very people they extract profits from. The government. Under the subject line, it's an internet commercial. Robert writes, message for Jen. I'm with TPG. Yes, they gave me the runaround for 5 days with please phone us bit, but on balance, they're pretty good. When I moved house 4 years ago, they just moved my account to the new address. It's just that they and just about every other company in the world assumes everyone owns a mobile phone. I do not, which makes filling in online forms difficult, as they all insist you give them a mobile phone number. To the cult of Apple, I joined 16 years ago. I just wanted a computer with software that I could turn on and it would work, without endless requests for third-party drivers that never worked. I still have my first Mac Pro from 2001. I don't use it anymore, but it still works when I turn it on. God, I don't know where my first... I think my first laptop weighed like 25 pounds. I bought it in 1995. Damn thing was huge. So I get it, and I think that thing went into a landfill or something long ago. Yes, I know. Another marital question coming from Tracy. Since Trump's wives are all friends, does that make the Trump wives past and present sister wives? I think it kind of does.
Ew.
Well, then I don't know how well they get along. I mean, there is that bit about Donald trying to rip the hair out of Ivanka. And I don't think Marla's a big fan either. Ron says, go ahead, Bob. Spend all that big money you have on Apple products. Yeah, because I got all that big money. I listen to you every day on my HP 8230 or my Dell E6500. The only Apple product I have is an iPod Nano, which can't be updated, and the back button only works sometimes. I got it for free at State Surplus at North Carolina State, and that's about what it's worth. Yeah, we've got... And see, this is how these things work out. We've got one Apple MacBook Pro here. We have that because of the mix desk we have that is FireWire capable, but would not work with Fire. And even though there was this list of like acceptable FireWire chipsets, it wouldn't work with any FireWire on any Windows device. And when I tried to sort it out, they had me, 9,712 levels deep in the root of C, and wanted me to modify the operating system code, something which I was not willing to do, because one of the things that the tech person there at the manufacturer of the mix desk said, of course we can't guarantee this will work, or that your computer will either once you're done. So yeah, we've got a MacBook Pro here so that I can do things with the mix desk that I couldn't otherwise do. And yeah, iPhones, because they just work better. And they're comparably priced. But there's no doubt there's an Apple tax to be paid. It's without it, no getting around the fact. And that's why when we did get a MacBook Pro, we got a 2011 one, you know, used and recertified and all that. To be fair, if we could afford it, I think things would run considerably more smoothly, but, you know. Let's see, so I got a Dell here, an Asus there, and the other two computers I built. Right. And yes, as Marty points out, Apple's pretty sleazy with their tax avoidance. And, of course, you know, the cell phones being made in factories where they have to put up suicide nets. But, you know, that was Foxconn, and they were making components for Android devices, too. And, well, you know, yeah. Hoo-wee! So, yeah, we've got $119 to go in fundraising this evening, which is excellent, especially considering that we're only an hour into the program. That's a beautiful thing. And, yeah, we'll take a break. It being Thursday and all, Thorn in the Side Thursday. We've got the Green News Report coming up. With Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. If you're on hold, stick around, and after the break, we'll come back and do some conversating, because this here is conversating radio, right? And we'll talk about, you know, there's other stuff to talk about. Things maybe touching on, like, breathing and so forth. Clarence with an email says, where are Hillary's kudos? She's showing folks what a real Christian marriage is supposed to do. Subject line, stick and stay. Yeah, I always kind of thought that, too. I mean, Jesus, last I checked, Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, didn't look too fondly on divorce. In fact, he looked so unfondly on divorce that he condemned it. So there's that. But then again, as we learned last night on Prayer Meeting Wednesday, whatever it is that she is, she's not really a Christian. Not according to people like Chappie Klingenschmidt and Pat Robertson, Jim Baker et al. Because remember, she's got a bad case of the demons. Steve in New York says, put me down for a $10 challenge. So somebody meets that, and Steve will put another 10 with it, and that'll take us down to $99 to go, which is flipping awesome for the end of the month and for your Swede beating. For those of you who aren't familiar, we beat the Swede in January. That was good for $50 extra on the end of the month. February was good for $60, $70 in March, $80 in April, $90 in May, $100 in June, $110 July, $120 August, $130, $130 extra if we can beat the Swede in September. Yes. Can we? We'll find out. I guess we will. So, yep, little break, and then Conversation Radio when we get back after the Green News Report. I'm Bob Kincaid. This one's cryptic.
Thank you.
It's Thursday, September 29, 2016.
Some country is going to be the clean energy superpower of the 21st century.
Clinton promotes climate and clean energy.
I think it's real.
I do not say that.
While Trump denies denial in the first presidential debate. Plus, coal industry tries to kill Obama's landmark power plant emission standards in federal court.
All of those killers and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I agree with her on one thing.
Oh, good.
Single greatest problem the world has is...
Global warming? Is it global warming?
Nuclear armament.
Damn!
Not global warming like you think and your president thinks.
My president? Isn't he your president too? Wait, where are you from? Damn it, we do need to build that wall. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, the first presidential debate, and surprise, surprise, no questions about climate change, but it managed to come up anyway somehow or another.
Yeah, no questions at all from debate moderator Lester Holt. That was the first presidential debate, not even on energy, not even as a matter of national security. But as you said, Democratic presidential nominee and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton brought it up herself, drawing a stark contrast between the two major party candidates on climate, clean energy, and jobs.
Take clean energy. Some country is going to be the clean energy superpower of the 21st century. Donald thinks that climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. I think it's real.
I do not say that.
And I think it's important that we grip this and deal with it. We can deploy a half a billion more solar panels. We can have enough clean energy to power every home. We can build a new modern electric grid. That's a lot of jobs. That's a lot of new economic activity.
Now, first, to Clinton's point, upgrading our aging electric grid alone and hardening against cyber attacks will create thousands of jobs that cannot be outsourced to other countries, as will building resilience into our infrastructure for increasingly frequent extreme weather events accelerated by climate change.
Who asked you to be a fact checker?
Well, for his part, it is very well documented that Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has called climate change a hoax numerous times. After denying his denial while Clinton was speaking, Trump then misled uninformed voters and cast doubt on the booming success of the U.S. renewable energy sector.
She talks about solar panels. We invested in a solar company, our country. That was a disaster. They lost plenty of money on that one. Now, look, I'm a great believer in all forms of energy, but we're putting a lot of people out of work. Our energy policies are a disaster. Our country is losing so much in terms of energy.
All right, Ms. Fact Checker, what do you got?
Well, he was probably referring to that one bankruptcy of that one solar company, Solyndra, 5 years ago. But he seems to be genuinely unaware of the fact that the solar industry is now the fastest growing job sector in the U.S.
It's like all he does is watch Fox News or something.
Trump wants to roll back environmental protections for air and water and increase drilling for fossil fuels.
Oh, he definitely watches Fox News.
He also clearly does not know much about the U.S. energy sector because he's been promising to increase coal mining while simultaneously increasing fracking for natural gas. But those two fossil fuels compete directly with each other, so it's a fantasy.
So the reason coal is in trouble is not because Obama and Clinton and their war on coal, but because fracking has now become cheaper than digging for coal.
Yes, and the rest of the world is moving away from coal, too.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
Clinton has proposed a $30 billion economic transition plan to help put coal country back to work on clean energy, but Trump has proposed nothing. So far, the corporate media continues to be allergic to questions about climate change and energy in the presidential debates, so far, even though it draws bright line contrasts between the two major party candidates.
And here we are again, 4 years later, after 4 years before that, still talking about the idea that none of these moderators will bring up climate change or global warming in a presidential debate.
Meanwhile, President Obama's landmark standards to cap carbon emissions from dirty power plants got its hearing before the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals this week. The Clean Power Plan allows states to decide for themselves how best to cut their power plant emissions.
Tyranny.
But coal states like West Virginia and the coal industry have jointly sued to stop it, arguing it's federal overreach. Now, if the appeals court overturns the plan, it will make it very difficult for the U.S. to cut our greenhouse gas emissions in time to avoid catastrophic global warming. And it is also a key component of our international commitment that led other countries like China to follow our lead. So the case is likely headed to the evenly divided Supreme Court, and the balance of that court, and pretty much the fate of the world, is up to the next president.
Oh, that's all.
No pressure.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Russia.
Sixteen minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Before running over to the Skype line, a quick to Ron who wrote this, not me. If you want to send cranky email, send it. Address it to Ron. But I'm sorry, I got a giggle out of this because sometimes you got to. If Trump is probably going to be trading melanoma in on a younger, slimmer version in the near future, will she go on the market as hardly used, driven only occasionally for short distances? It's the short distances part that got the cowbell. Let's run over to the Skype line where Laurel is waiting. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Yes, it's my first time ever making a Skype call, so I'm just trying to test the kinks out. I might as well try it for the first time in front of a worldwide audience. Why not?
Damn straight, and you're doing fine.
Greetings from the nitrate-powered waters of the Minnesota Prairie. I am Laurel, and it's good to be on. I'm one of the few of the proud of the $10 a month subscribers, and you know it's such a great honor to be able to speak with you tonight.
It's a joy to hear from you, and thank you for the help. Not Laurel, Laurel. I will not make
Laurel.
That mistake
yes,
twice.
It is Laurel. Trust me, everybody makes that mistake at least once. Everybody makes that mistake at least once. I'm going to try and see if I can get Little Thunder here to contribute a comment to me. Are you willing to contribute something? No, you're just willing to bite my hand.
There we go. Yes.
That's Little Thunder.
Oh. Yes. And is that a husky bark?
Yes, that is a Malamute bark. Thunder, the dog, the late dog that I made a tribute to, he was a Chow Husky mix. I went from a Chow Husky mix to a Husky Malamute mix, so I somewhat upgraded in size.
Eye color?
Eye color is the exact same, but size I definitely upgraded in. Thunder at his heaviest was about 60 pounds. This one at about a year and 3 months is roughly about 100 pounds. So,
Thunder's a big baby.
Yes, Little Thunder is a big baby. LT is a big baby. I call him LT because he is a little bit imposing. I got him from the Humane Society a couple of months ago. His original family gave him up. They had small children, and he's neutered. There's not a mean bone in his body. But the way he was playing, he would just knock those little kids over all the time. So they had to give him up, and it just so happens he wound up with me. So very fortunate.
I have a feeling you were both fortunate in that regard.
Yes. Yes, the neighbor wants to come play with him right now, but I'm trying to keep him inside so I can get him to try and introduce himself. But he has a little bit.
Oh, no, I love that bark because it sounds like it's... It sounds like it's just a phoneme away from human speech.
Yeah, he communicates really well. You know, he is my, you know, and I apologize, but I might need your reverb here for this.
Okay.
He's my partner for the apocalypse.
I don't think I gotta set that up so I can reverb you guys. Wait. Are you saying he's an apocalypto puppy?
Yes, apocalypto puppy. That's right. I mean, I'm not sure how in you are to modern day gaming, but you know, in the big time Fallout franchise games, there's this guy wandering through his post apocalyptic world with his trusty German Shepherd by his side, and I'm thinking, well, I live a little bit further north than that. I'm a Minnesotan, so why don't I get myself a Malamute? So,
yeah, but I don't. Well, global warming continues.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you know, I'd like to get on a spiel about global warming, but I'm not sure if I want to be where it ends up.
I'm not asking for specifics, but what part of Minnesota?
I'm actually in the southern part. I'm in more like East Dakota Stan. I work in Steve King's district in Iowa, so I'm tucked away in a corner far away from the influence of the Twin Cities liberalism.
So when you come home every day after working in Steve Kingistan, do you have to shower and bleach? I mean, what happens?
Well, I was actually asked to run in our congressional district for state senate, but I actually lived like 4 miles outside of that district. There was another person that lives in the district I live in that's a pretty good union rep, so I'm not going to worry about that. But
right,
if I had lived 6 miles further west towards the exact corner of the state, I'd probably be running for state senate right now. That's
well, I'm not that familiar with your area there, but
over there
on the eastern side, over there by the juncture of the St. Croix and the Mississippi, that is some beautiful countryside too, over around Hastings and across the river into Prescott, into Wisconsin,
don't
gorgeous.
Get me wrong, I certainly don't want to downplay my area. I mean, this area of Minnesota prairie is absolutely beautiful. You know, there's light rolling hills as far as the eye can see. You know, you remember the movie Dances with Wolves.
Oh, yeah.
It may not be that mountainous, but it's right there. We had a beautiful natural spring that we had built, not me personally, but there was a structure just west of my small town here in our corner of the state that housed this beautiful natural spring, and you could come there and get, you know, spring water out of these concrete carvings of a Native American, a buffalo, a water jug, and you come out there and just sit your plastic jug in front of those under those water springs and fill them up. It looked almost like a roadside steeple, but it was just a roadside spring.
Yeah, but the thing is, there's no such thing as just a roadside string, Laurel, because that's like 500,000-year-old water. And
yeah,
it was a very good year for the aquifer that year.
Exactly. And like I said, I say greetings to you from the nitrate-powered waters of, you know, the Minnesota prairie, because Lord knows I've got to have me some pork chops. And you know about all the, you know, hog farm runoff and everything.
Yes.
And about, you know, 20 years ago, they started posting warnings, you know, the nitrate level in this spring's a little bit high. I've got pregnant women. You might not want to drink from here. And after about another 5 or 10 years, they started saying, you know, if you got small children, you might not want to let them drink from you here. And about 15 years or so ago, they just decided, you know what, the water quality here is just a disaster. We're going to tear that spring down. We're going to tear it down and let it just flow into the regular natural runoff or whatever. But hey, God forbid I have my eggs without bacon or ham, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, first world problems, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and see, I know my dear friends up in the Northwoods of Wisconsin are battling a CAFO up there, until you have experienced, and I'm not talking about out of a bottle from, you know, Fiji water or any of that stuff, but until you've, I mean, my God, clean water. It's not the same as the stuff that smells like a swimming pool that comes out of the tap.
And I don't go back as far as you do. I mean, I was born in 71, but even then, you know, I can remember as a child, you know, the water from that was just spectacular.
Well, we've got a little.
It was a family event going out there and filling up.
Oh, sure, and there were places like that around here. There's still a spring that comes right out of the side of the mountain, Oh, probably about 3-4 miles from where I am. You wouldn't dare drink it, but my God, once upon a time it was lovely. And we had a well here until they blew the mountains up a few miles out the road. That was, the well is 72 feet deep. And my grandmother had it drilled in 1937. And all through my childhood, the first thing I did when we would get up here to visit is I would run and beg Gran to let me pull up a bucket of water. Because it was that special. It was amazing.
And my mom, she was born about half hour's drive north of me in this area. There's a small area of lakes. You know, Minnesota's the land of 10,000 lakes. And this pristine area known as Lake Chautauqua was just extremely, extremely pristine around the time of my mother's birth in, you know, mid-1930s. And she could just remember, you know, all the times they would go swimming there as a kid. They'd swim out in the middle of the lake and stare 30 feet down and be able to see the bottom, you know. And it's just, you know, there's that sense of nature that we are so missing today. And it's just, you know, it's something that really pains my heart. It makes...
Well, and it brings into very, very, very sharp focus. God, I'm beginning to sound like Trump. What's happening to me? It brings into sharp focus the nature of the struggle that's going on out in North Dakota relative to the Dakota Access Pipeline. I don't know if you know this or not, but one of the latest occurrences out there
down by Freeman, South Dakota. That's about 80 miles from where I live.
Well,
where that pipeline ruptured, and one of the things I remember most about reading that article from the local Sioux Falls paper, the same paper, by the way, that Hillary Clinton, in front of their editorial board in Sioux Falls, made the accusation that I've got to stay in the race in 2008 because Lord knows what could happen to Obama. Look what happened to Bobby Kennedy. That same paper. But anyway, I was reading that paper, and it listed a mention from a comment from the landowner himself, the landowner from where this oil was springing up out of the ground, and he's standing up for the oil company. And I'm thinking, what can you do about that? What can you really do about that?
I honestly don't know. But a law enforcement officer drew a firearm and pointed it at one of the protectors this week.
Yeah, I'm very surprised everyone up there is still alive, because Lord knows, you know, all mentions to he won't be named aside, we invented the concept of the Holocaust. Okay. The European, we put down probably 100 million of the native population in this land just to make it habitable for us.
Right. Between disease, acts of murder, enslavement, forced relocation. Yeah.
You know, and trust me, what it has done to the native population, I won't even go into. You know, there's so many problems that begin to go with that. You know, I've got a sister that has a husband who came basically from the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, and Lord knows he's dealing with problems. And believe me, that discussion could go on a long time, and I'm not going to go there because white privilege. I don't even understand how it's like to be literally a throwaway people. To literally be a part of a sacrifice zone and knowing that the powers that be literally think of you as refuse.
And that your life does not have value.
No. You know, people have value. The surroundings have value. Our lives have value. All the trees have value. Our pets have value. My dog has value. My late dog has value. And one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you tonight, I wanted to, you know, talk to you a little bit about my late dog. You know, I lost him to cancer a year ago today. And I tell you what, a more faithful dog you will never find. This dog, he was basically, just from 2001 onward, he was an integral part of my life. We were inseparable. And, you know, it may seem strange to say this. I mean, I was 30 years old already when I got him. But every time I was with him, I felt like a child. That joyful spirit of just being with your best friend, not having a care in the world, walking and exploring everywhere, and the way he cared for other people during the times, you know, during the times where I was constantly visiting my parents passed away about 5 or 6 years ago, and when I would come in and care for my parents, the attention he showed for them, the devotion he showed for them as they were passing, was just, I can't begin to describe this. I wrote this down as a tribute to him. I posted it on Facebook on the day that I got a lot of positive requests. And I know people hate having other people read on radio, but if you just allow me the time
to go right ahead. This sure. Tribute,
I'm going to need a little Smirnoff for this because I'm tearing up right now. I wrote this in tribute to my beloved K-10, the Amazing Thunder Dog, February 3rd, 2001 to September 29th, 2015. We went for a walk today, my constant companion. The weather was absolutely stunning. It was a day so special that I wished it would last forever. We shared a long, kick-ass, awesome journey together, and I can truly say that I've cherished every adventure. You've graced me and so many others with your incredible and lovable free spirit. Obedient, loyal, gentle, and proud, you've been the greatest friend anyone can ask for. I've always known that you were special. I nicknamed you K-10 because you always were a notch above all the other dogs. And deep down, I know you knew that as well. Since your playful puppy days, you've charmed your way into the hearts of everyone you've ever met. Today, we reach the end of the path. Though your eyes are cloudy, you can see your beautiful hunting grounds wonderfully spread across the valley ahead of us. Though your legs are tired, you still eagerly prance along, led by that magical nose of yours, which despite the many years and endless miles, is just as sharp as ever. You skillfully track the scents of an eternity of squirrels, rabbits, and lovely maidens to the place of our parting. I pause as we share one last precious moment together. You look up at me with a gaze that is impossibly full of both deep sadness and great anticipation at the same time. I bend down, and as you lick a tear off my cheek, I unlatch your collar and release your earthly bonds. You flash me one final smile, and away you go, galloping fast, ears perked and alert, eyes gleaming in the brilliant light, free tail wagging. I let you go today, Thunder. I let you go with love. Give Mom and Dad a kiss for me. You'll be in my heart and soul forever. I wish you happy hunting in heaven till we meet again on that wonderful rainbow bridge, my dear, amazing friend. Thank you.
Lovely. Simply lovely. And straight from the heart.
You know, Bob, you know, it's not just about how these animals interact with us. You know, I look at Little Thunder over here, and he's waiting for me to take him for another walk. You know,
he's waiting to take you for another walk.
Exactly. He's going to drag me along here in about another hour or so. And it's just so amazing that this is not just our world. This is not just the realm of humanity. This is not just the realm of some genetically re-engineered wolf that we call dog. This is an experience that we are sharing with everything. And this is an experience that we need to hold dear and clear, you know, dear to our hearts. You know, everything that we hold right now is so precious. And I realize how tenuous that bond is right now. You know, I realize just how frightening a prospect methane-driven climate change is. Methane-driven climate change is a completely different beast than carbon dioxide-driven climate change.
Right, because methane is, you know, 100 times more...
Carbon dioxide raised global average temperature roughly 1 degree Celsius over the course of the 200 years of Industrial Revolution going up to the start of last year, starting around the start of 2015. Methane-driven climate change added another degree Celsius of global warming in just 20 months. We're dealing with a completely different animal right now, and I have to say this with all due bluntness, but from here on in, things are going to happen very fast. And as much as I want to not see Trump in the White House, with methane-driven climate change, unless we really commit to finding a path through this, it's not going to matter who is in our positions of power, because we're looking at a total collapse of our global agricultural system within the next 5 to 10 years. If this 1 or 2 degrees Celsius, you know, if this 1 degree Celsius every 2 year pattern holds up, and if you can imagine the hell that's going on in Syria right now, imagine what's going to happen when the monsoons fail in the Indian subcontinent and the Indians and the Pakistanis are starving to death and they hate each other with a fire of 1,000 suns and they're all armed with nuclear weapons, you know, yep, hundreds at a time armed at each other.
Yeah, there goes the neighborhood happens real quick under those circumstances.
They're going to make what's happening in Syria look like a Sunday picnic without the food. Well, thank you very
much. Didn't President Obama, I forget under what circumstances, but didn't he recently mention it made my pink little ears perk up, Laurel, because it was something I'd talked about here, and far less eloquently, I guess. But he mentioned the problems of human migration that are going to attend climate change. And those things are, I mean, we're not prepared. And not just the United States is not prepared, China's not prepared. No country, no person, no group, no nation, state, no religion, nobody is prepared for that. And to a certain extent, there are elements of climate change-driven mass migration that attend the migration of the Syrian refugees into Europe. Because part of the reason that Syria blew up had to do with that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it was the food crisis. The crops failed. You know, the farm prices, their crop prices collapsed. And they didn't know what to do, so they went to Assad and said, please, Assad, help us. And Assad turned around and gunned everybody down. You know, what can you do? Because ultimately, in the end, for the most part, starving people are not peaceful people. From what I know about starving people, yeah, some of them will lay down and die. A lot of them won't. Especially in places like America where the people are outnumbered by the guns. You know,
and meanwhile, I don't know if you caught this, Laurel, or not, but there was a Gary Johnson was asked to name his most respected leader of some other country, and he drew a blank. And then at the end, he said, I guess I'm having another Aleppo moment. And as Charlie Pierce pointed out on his blog today, he posted a picture of a man carrying a baby out of the rubble of Aleppo and said something like, no, asshole, that's an Aleppo moment. You just need to go away.
Exactly.
And, you know, we really are, in many, nationally, as a country, I'm not talking about individual ethnic groups or peoples who have been oppressed, but as a country, we don't conceptualize even what Europeans conceptualize in terms of disaster and destruction, because it hasn't really much happened to us. Now, the South still remembers Sherman's March to the Sea that they brought upon themselves. But apart from that, no. How many people do you suppose remember when remember the British burning down, you know, Washington D.C. and looting the White House?
No, not very many.
How many people remember the Canadians
during that time invading us and kicking our tail as well?
But, right, because we earned it. Or the British bombardment of portions of New York City. Well, the portions of New York City that the British bombarded, one of the things about New York is it's constantly reinventing itself, and you can't even find old New York anymore to a large extent.
No.
You know, there was the train wreck in Hoboken today, and I was expecting somebody to start screaming over the for-profit media at any minute, you know, where's the Muslims? The Muslims done did it. And that may yet happen. But, you know, that was farmland. That was forest or pine barrens and what have you.
And as much as I would like to say there's something we can learn from that sort of history, given just how powerful methane-driven climate change is, there really are no roadmaps for where we're going.
No, because the last time this happened, the dinosaurs weren't even up and running yet, I don't think.
Yeah, we look at, there's an interesting moment of time that genealogists tie to around 75,000 years ago when they noticed something peculiar about our family tree as a species. Everybody likes to say that we're kind of closely related to other primates, that we share 98.5% of DNA with chimpanzees and 98% of, you know, DNA with gorillas and whatnot. Well, they looked at each species in particular, and they noticed that within chimpanzees, which do not have a large global population primarily, but they noticed within chimpanzees, who have a population of roughly 250,000 globe-wide, they share, within those small numbers, a larger genetic diversity than the entire human race of 7.5 billion today, which led many people to the conclusion that there was some time, not in our very recent past, we're talking 75,000 years ago or so today, where the human species is so similar today that there must have been a point roughly around 75,000 years ago in which the human species, the entire human race, was reduced down to maybe a few thousand or maybe even a few hundred breeding pairs. And that's something that...
Well, really, I mean, we know that at one point what became humanity was down to about 2,000 individuals.
Exactly.
Tucked into a tiny little forest corner in Africa, and that's a pretty shallow gene pool when you get right down to it.
Yeah, and people like to connect that to the Toba supervolcanic eruption in Indonesia around 74,000 years ago, and you know people like to point to Yellowstone, how that's a supervolcano. Well, it's a supervolcano, yeah, but it's operating on geological timescales. Sure, it's overdue. It could technically go off tomorrow. It could wait another 200,000 years to do so. Meanwhile, the wait where... Yes, little thunder. Yes, little thunder. Meanwhile, with the rate that we are injecting methane into the atmosphere, by the time 250,000 years rolls around, is Mount Rushmore even going to be intact to catch the ash?
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Little Thunder, come here. Are you excited to be in front of a worldwide audience tonight? You tell everybody how excited you are to be in front of a worldwide audience tonight. Speak. You are excited.
Oh, hello.
Yes,
hello, Little Thunder. Yes.
Little Thunder is a good boy. Well, thanks for letting me on.
It was an absolute pleasure. And you've gotten
Little Thunder Howell with you for a while. It's great to know that my Skype actually works.
It works fabulously, and you've gotten a lot of notes from Kim in New York, who said, "I'm so very touched by Laurel talking about his dog who passed away a year ago, having lost my husband Matthew so recently. I can relate to his grief over the loss of his best friend. I'm crying for his loss and mine." You got people responding to you in the chat room. Jen in Australia said, "Nothing strange about what you say." She said, yeah, just one second. It's in no way strange. Your words have touched me deeply. I love dogs, but can't have them in my our family because it hurts so damned much to lose a dog. So, that's, yeah, yeah. And Jim said, a lovely tribute to a four-legged friend who never let you down. So, you've struck a nerve, and
well, Bob,
I think it's a.
Hey, yeah. I wish you keep going. Don't let Frontier get you down. In my opinion, you are.
And
you
you've
are
got
one
them,
of the
you've
master,
got,
you are one of the master narrators of our time, and I certainly wish you all the best.
Well, thank you so very kindly for saying that, you know, and I'm glad to have
you.
You're worth
every one of the $10 I regularly contribute, and you know, take my 1467, you know, with all my humility that I can muster, and you know, let's get some more $10 contributors out there. We need
that's right. That's absolutely right. Now we've got room for one more. One more new subscriber to be inducted into the secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. So that's out there, too, with Harold's kind offer. So thank you very much for the kind words. You know, it's not like working in front of a live audience with footlights and you kind of try to cheat and look beyond them and see. I don't get that, but it's uplift like that and kind words like that that really do make it worthwhile, because this is about the community y'all built, not about anything about me. But thank you very kindly.
I want to keep you as part of this community. Trust me.
Thank you, Laurel.
Good work.
Thank you very kindly.
Good work.
Bye now. Laurel and Little Thunder, all 100 pounds of him, calling from Minnesota. Let's see here. Okay. Let's see. Got to hang one up. And then we'll go here, and let me run over to the stress line. We just go 1, 2, 3 in order of appearance. Hey, welcome to the program. That was not... Are you there? Hello? Anybody? Okay, we'll go over, and I suspect this is Billable Rick on the Skype line. Is that you, Rick?
Yeah. How you doing, Bob?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. Good. Wow. What a call from Laurel.
I just can't see that happening on the EIB radio network. Can you?
No, I don't think so. I have a story about my dog as well. Actually, that's why I was calling. It's something that is fairly funny, which I think everybody will enjoy. Motivated by my dog, Coco Bear. She's a 14.5-pound Maltipoo, apricot colored, cute as a button, very smart, and about 2 years old or so. And she has this habit: when she gets really excited, she will snort, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I got home last night and I was like thinking, okay, the debate, and, you know, I started calling her Trump of something, and then I came up with a name for a new moniker for Trump, Trump of Snortus Rex.
Very good, very good. That's in line with something. Oh, what did I say the other night? Snuffatrumpagus.
Snuffatrumpagus, yeah. Although that sounds too much like George Stephanopoulos.
Yeah, but remember, the Snuffleupagus was invisible, and only Big Bird could see him. And if only we could say the same about Benito Cheeto.
Yeah, no kidding. Boy, I tell you, he just doesn't get it. He's like doubling down on this, Hillary basically, you know, baited him with that former Miss Universe, and you know, he just won't shut up. The guy has no impulse control, you know?
No filter.
No, not at all. No, totally unfiltered. Totally unfiltered. I can't imagine a guy like that having his finger on the, nuclear button, you know? Or at least having a nuclear football. A totally scary proposition, you know? I think the more that
Yeah, I was talking about that. That, you know, that's Cuban Missile Crisis scary.
Yeah, yeah. Right, right. I mean, that, I think that's where Hillary is, you know, she talks about how Jackie had told John, her husband, after that crisis that, geez, you know, it's a good thing that, you know, my concern is that, you know, I forget the exact quote, but, you know, something to do about how little people, you know, might, you know, try to just, you know, be big, let's just say, you know, he was worried about little, I guess he said a comment to Jackie to the fact that, you know, I wasn't worried so much about, you know, strong people, you know, dropping the bomb so much as a little person, you know, trying to be big and drop a bomb or something like that. I'm totally mangling the quote.
No, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, I think that's...
And those people existed on either side of the political divide in among the Soviets and the Americans.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, you had your Curtis Mays, you know, and... On the U.S. side, I don't know who the Soviets had, but...
Yeah, let's remember General Jack D. Ripper in Dr. Strangelove is a parody of real people, real military.
Right.
Yeah, and,
right.
And so was General Buck Turgidson.
Buck Turgidson? Oh, jeez.
Now you just stay right here, honey, and I'll be back before you can say, blast off!
Oh, jeez. That movie was like that was way ahead of its time in terms of its humor, its, you know, campiness, you know.
Yeah, and by the way, we have I saw this earlier today, and Scott in San Diego has reminded me of it. He said, with all due apologies to Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke, a picture of Donald Trump, super callous, fragile, racist, extra braggadocious.
Oh God, that's too much.
Yeah, you got to work on that. Super callous, fragile, racist, extra braggadocious. And yes, it does sound atrocious.
Oh, jeez. That's too much. I've got to thank Scott for my new Trump bumper sticker.
Yes?
I put it on my car. It says Trump 2016, and it's got like his hair, how it comes out, you know, it's got the blue and the red, you know, the red, white, and blue fringe kind of coming out over the edge of his forehead. And then below it has it says, because America needs more bombast, bluster, and bullshit.
Beautiful. And it's safe for you to have that in California. You're not going to get your tires slashed.
Well, it might be safe in West Virginia, too. And my theory, my operating theory for that is that chances are that the Trump supporters are probably too fucking dumb to understand that you're being satirical in supposedly supporting Trump. So they'll see the big Trump 2016, and they won't read the stuff below it. So you'd probably be safe anyway. They'd probably figure, you know, that's a Trump supporter.
Do you know how much tires cost?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I know. I need some.
I mean, it's not worth the gamble, Rick.
Well, that's probably not. Probably not. Maybe not in West Virginia, but I mean, I don't know. I'm just thinking that the you know, the knuckle walking mouth breathers that, you know, are going to vote for Trump might think that you were actually pro Trump because they wouldn't look beyond the, you know, the Trump 2016, and they wouldn't look further down, you know, in smaller print. But I'm having some fun with that. So, you know, I haven't checked the polls. I wonder what they're saying.
I haven't looked at it. Let's look, shall we?
The 538. Yeah,
that's always easy. Yeah, it's there in my browser. Boom, it pops right
up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, last time I checked, it was like Hillary had like a 61% chance or something like that, maybe.
The forecast based only on polls.
Mm-hmm.
538.com giving Hillary has 63.7% chance to Donald's 36.2. The nowcast changes to, whoa, and that's if the election was held right now, 71.9 to 28.0. But I would just as soon not even. I don't want anybody thinking that she's going to win.
No. And I noticed since the last time I looked, a couple of pale red states have now turned to pale blue, Nevada and Florida.
Yes, and North Carolina's pale blue, and Ohio...
Oh, is it pale blue in which one, the Nowcast? I'm looking at the polls only. Let's see here.
I'm looking at the Nowcast and...
Oh, shoot, okay. North
and
Carolina is
Ohio is fast. Ohio is fast approaching flesh-colored Band-Aid, you know, white people's flesh.
Yeah. And Iowa is still Trump country, I see. I don't know what the hell has happened.
But everything changed. The polls plus forecast is sobering still, 60.8 to 39.2. And anything can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, why? I was surprised. Yeah. I was surprised that that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini wasn't out screaming terrorism the minute that he heard about that. Maybe he was. The minute that he heard about the Hoboken train wreck.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, in the
what caused that? Do we know?
I don't. Because apparently, I mean, it just went straight into the station. Just
oh my God!
Over 100 people injured, people dead.
Wow! That's all they had on CNN this morning. I kind of looked at it a little bit, but I didn't really.
Well, I see something like that, and I grimace.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a measure, Rick, of how much we've changed as a people. Or, I don't know, maybe it's just me. You know, 20 years ago, something like that breaks on the news. One, the 24 hours news cycle was a different thing back then.
Mm-hmm.
Social media didn't exist.
So, yeah.
You know, internet was in its infancy.
Well, what happened back then, Bob, the networks would break in with special coverage. And they would sometimes continue it for like hours.
But the thing is, the questions that get asked 20 years ago is, well, was the engineer drunk? Was he on drugs?
Yeah.
Or
right.
Did the brakes fail? Or was there something wrong with the rail? And in my mind, at least, I'm not the one thinking it because I'm not walking around scared of ISIS Bruga Bruga, but
right.
I'm just sort of anticipating my fellow countrymen. That thing happens, and I go, oh, shit. You know, did the Muslims do it in 3, 2, 1? ISIS! Because we've changed that way. Ordinary accidents don't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Emery and Eileen have a little too much down to the Elks Club on Friday night and plow into an old oak tree on the way home, you can guarantee somebody out there in red state America, right wing, white wing America, well, obviously that was the ISIS.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Everything is ISIS. Yeah. You come home and you find your house has been broken into. Ah, ISIS. Obviously. You know.
Which is right up there with thanks Obama.
There you go. Yeah. But I mean, I suspect it was probably just the dilapidation of the rail, the lines. You know, because our tracks are so damn old in this country, especially in the eastern third of the U.S. You know, I mean, we just have not invested in our infrastructure.
And that's what Jen just asked from Australia. She said, Hoboken? Crash? Farcanel. That was my train for years when I lived in Hoboken. Is this a crumbling infrastructure issue? When I was in PA recently, there were two train crashes.
Yeah. Oh, there was a big one in PA not that long ago. Maybe, I think it was like... I don't know how many.
I just checked Chicken Noodle News. I mean, this thing blew all the way into the train station. Okay, I mean, this was like the end of a bad. This was like the end of the Silver Streak or whatever.
Oh yeah.
Remember that movie from the 70s, Gene Wilder?
Yeah. Richard Pryor. Yeah.
Now they're CNN is reporting that part of the crash investigation will focus on positive train control. The safety system combines GPS, wireless radio, and computers to monitor trains and stop them from colliding, derailing, or speeding.
Mm.
And the headline says, could positive train control have prevented New Jersey accident? Over on the main page, it's a different assertion. The link on the Chicken Noodle News main page says, train lacked mandated safety system.
Oh, geez. Well, the whole positron thing... Bob, I mean, there was a really bad crash out here in California. It was a Metro Rail crash, like I want to say maybe 5 years ago. And I guess the conductor was like texting while he was trying to, you know, operate the train, and it was going too fast, and it went off the tracks, and, you know, like, I think like 20 people died. He was actually prosecuted, and I think he was convicted of involuntary manslaughter or something. He had some pretty serious charges against him, and they were saying back then that, you know, positron train technology could have prevented the crash. And it's like, what the fuck are we doing? You know, we know what we have to do, but we're not doing it.
I mean, Jesus, they describe it now. They say, in this particular instance, the train overran its stopping point, slammed into a bumper block, went airborne, and then hurtled through a passenger concourse in the terminal.
Oh, my God. That's like a disaster movie.
At least one person is dead, 100 injured. One passenger said it didn't. It didn't even appear to slow down as it was coming into the station.
Oh, jeez. Wow, that is horrible.
And 5 years ago, and see, this is what it means to have a crumbling infrastructure, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
5 years ago, a train overran the stop at the same station.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's like Groundhog Day all over again. The same thing happens with gun safety, the failure to have reasonable gun, you know, reform. You know, we're not fixing our problems. We know what we have to do. We're not fucking doing it, you know. Nobody but ourselves to blame for that, unfortunately. And, you know, but people die because of it.
Because the train was being pushed and not pulled, the passenger car was the first one through the walls.
Oh, jeez.
That's the one that went airborne.
Wow. Now, do we know if one of the passengers was killed, or was it somebody in the station itself?
I don't know. I mean, they identified the one person killed.
Yeah.
They didn't say if she was, you know, in the station or. She was standing on the platform and was struck by debris.
Oh, jeez.
A 34-year-old woman, Fabiola Bitar de Croon of Hoboken.
Wow. Totally preventable, you know? It does not sound like a terrorist thing. It sounds like a, you know, operator error, human error, which, you know, positron train technology would prevent that. You know, like, why don't we just...
Can we ask a question, and I don't know, maybe this isn't relevant, but somehow I suspect that it is. How often do things like this happen in Europe? How often do things like this happen in Japan?
Yeah.
How often do things like this happen in Australia?
Yeah.
Now,
well, I can answer your question about Japan, because I know they had a pretty bad train accident not that long ago, like in the last month or two, I'm thinking. I'm not sure how many people died, but I think there were fatalities.
Well, something makes me think that the Germans would not tolerate this.
No. Well, any rational, you know, country would not tolerate it.
The French, you know, would not like, tolerate yeah. this. They won't tolerate this in the UK because mass transit matters. Mass transit is serious. Mass transit is important to the entire population.
Yeah.
But you know what's important in Merca? Cutting taxes.
Yeah, right. Jeez.
I'm going to afford myself a moment of pure, unmitigated, unabashed assholishness.
Please.
You know who I wish had been in the lead car of that train? Grover goddamn Norquist.
Oh, there you go. Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, right. Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, just as I wish that at the next mass shooting that Wayne LaPierre happens to be there as well, you know?
It's the same thing, yeah. And of course, that makes us a bunch of mean left-wingers.
Yeah, right. Terrorists, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Hey, who's Iowa play this weekend?
I don't know. They barely got by Rutgers last week.
I noticed that happened.
Yeah, I didn't watch the game. I think it was
my beloved Mountaineers face Kansas State.
Oh,
and you know, if you like squeakers, if you like thrill a minute offensive showcases, last week's game against BYU was a dandy. They're at FedEx Stadium in D.C.
Yeah, what happened there? Was that against the West Virginia and BYU?
Yeah, we won 35-32 in the. We were desperately trying to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory when a member of our defensive backfield, with time running off the clock, screwed up and jumped up and intercepted a pass by BYU in our end zone, thus preventing the winning touchdown from being scored.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Our defense was nowhere to be seen. this was our bend and then break defense.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's okay. I mean, your team's undefeated, I think, aren't they?
Yes, we are.
Are you 4-0 or 3-0?
3-0. And this is the biggest test thus far, Kansas State this weekend.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Iowa plays against Northwestern this week. I'm trying to remember Northwestern got killed last week. Trying to remember who they lost to. They played well for a while and then they just, you know, they played against Nebraska. Nebraska's tough with, Tommy Armstrong.
Yeah, junior, well, yeah. Nebraska's tough and Nebraska, did you see the national anthem thing with Nebraska?
No, tell me about it.
You've got a whole bunch of, you got a whole bunch of, players who decided to kneel, or not a whole bunch, but a few players who decided to kneel during the national anthem.
Yeah.
And it was horrifying, the response, because Nebraska is a very white place.
Because what now?
Nebraska is a very white place.
Yeah, oh, totally, yeah. Yeah, conservative as well.
After he knelt during the national anthem, Michael Rose Ivy said that he received lynching threats from the fans.
Oh, jeez. Probably Nebraska fans, right?
Mm-hmm. He said, while the anthem played, I prayed along with Deshaun and Muhammad, and we asked God to watch over us and protect us, to look down on this country with grace and mercy, and to look down on all of us with grace and mercy. As we looked at what's been going on in this country, the injustices that have been taking place primarily against people of color, we all realized that there's a systemic problem in America that needs to be addressed. He said he didn't expect the enormous amount of hateful, racially motivated comments they received from friends, peers, fans, members of the media, and others about the method of protest. Some believed Deshaun, Muhammad, and myself should be kicked off the team or suspended, while some said we deserve to be lynched or shot just like the other black people that have died recently.
Oh, geez.
Another believed that since we didn't want to stand for the anthem, we should be hung before the anthem for the next game.
Oh, God.
Welcome to Merca. And then he went on, he said, I can't tell you the numerous amount of times I've heard the N-word being shouted at my teammates and I from opposing fans from behind our bench. My freshman year, I can remember going to a frat party and was told that niggers are not allowed in this house, and we were escorted out several minutes later by security officers.
At a fraternity house in Lincoln?
Yes.
Jesus Christ. My opinion of Nebraskans has gone down even further. They're the kind of people who elect representatives like Western Iowa elects Steve King as their.
Well, remember they sent Ben Sasse to the Senate, and he's an up and comer. He's anti-Trump, But he's got him some dreams for 2020.
Yeah.
Or well, maybe 24.
Yeah.
He's one of those youngins who can hang around for a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you hear about all these Republicans look at this past term. I mean, you had all these, you know, supposedly, you know, stars of the Republican Party, and they ended up, you know, getting squashed by, you know, Trumpus Nordis, you know?
Yeah.
That's just horrible. I was talking to Snork, speaking of lynching after football games, there's do you know Iowa State's football stadium? Do you know what it's named after?
I know Iowa's is named after Niall Kinnick.
Yeah, Niall Kinnick. No, Iowa State is named after an athlete on the Iowa State team who was lynched by the opponent after one of the games.
I had no idea.
After one of Iowa State's games. Yeah. Snork told me about that. I didn't know that either because I follow Iowa, not Iowa State. But, I think that was it. I think it's Hilton. It's Hilton, or is that the basketball? Not the basketball.
I don't know. I've never heard that story before. I'll have to dig into it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I got to ask you, what's the countdown to Geezer Palooza?
Well, I got my bracelet. I have to enter it, the ID number and so forth. But 2 weeks, actually. 2 weeks from the camp out starts 2 weeks from yesterday. Okay, so I'm going to camp out, I think, on the 13th. Is Thursday the 13th or is it? I think Thursday is the 13th. I'm going to camp out Thursday night, and then the shows start on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night.
Yeah, Thursday's the 13th, so, right.
Yeah, looking forward to that. My son and I had gotten a nice camera, an Nikon camera, 800 a magnification in terms of a zoom lens.
Whoa.
It's like professional, but you don't change the lens.
You'll be able to count the liver spots, you know, spots on Paul McCartney's face.
Pretty much.
I got to quit that. I'm being an asshole about it. That's going to be an awesome show. No,
that's okay. I mean, these guys, I mean, you know, they're giving away, like, free tickets to Desert Trip on our local radio stations, our classic rock stations, and, you know, they're calling it the classic rock concert of a lifetime, which is probably true, you know. Because you have all these bands at the twilight of their careers, you know, this is probably, you know, might be the last time when all of them are well enough to perform on the same, you know, ticket, let's say, you know. So I'm looking forward to it. The problem with this camera, we saw Black Sabbath last Saturday night at something called Ozfest that's held out in San Bernardino every year.
No, that's San Bernardino. No, you have to pronounce it like Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a very long time. San Bernardino.
Yeah. And you know, we recorded the songs. We had a great seat. We were like in the orchestra section, and you know, I kind of decided like the morning of the show, "Oh, let me see what I can, you know, see if they have any tickets." And it's like, you know, the cheap seats are all sold out. It's like, "Oh, well, let's see what we can get for something else." So, you know, it was pretty good. He had a cold, though. He kept complaining about, you know, having a cold, and he was snorting and stuff. And
has anybody seen? Now, see, I was going to go there. That's just too easy. It's too cheap. Hey, Rick, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Hey, you too, Bob. You take care, all right?
All right. You going to be around for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow? Are we still in billing mode?
Well, I'm trying to. I'm in brief finishing mode right now, so I'll see how I'm doing. I'm working on this thing. I need to get it done, so I'll probably be around, though, okay?
All right. Take it easy, Rick.
Hey, you too. Take care, man.
Bye now.
Bye.
The one and only Billable Rick, and eagerly awaiting his camping trip. Okay, back over to the stress line. Todd, are you there?
Hey, Bob, I'm here this time, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, this is a business call. I can't hear you too well. It's kind of squirrely. This call kind of weird. But is it Larry that started the month with the dollar match?
Yeah, that's Larry.
Is that fulfilled yet?
No, we are 59. No, I'm sorry. $55 away.
Well, that's the reason I called. I really want to see that succeed because, you know, like I've donated when I can, but you know, I'm sure other people are listening. Just, you know, if everybody can do a dollar, it really makes a difference. And the thing is that folks, new folks to your program, and may not know that, you know, you have a wonderful website. Your shows are all archived. You have a competent, a superbly competent historian who has his work archived on the website. You know, you can brush up on your Federalist Papers and historian Dr. O'Brien, you know, he's able to tie in current events with history, you know, unlike most of the instructors that we had in school who were boring. You know, it's a valuable resource.
Oh, that's Dr. Bill's special genius. He brings it to life.
You know,
it's like, and yeah, I don't know if you heard me earlier. Today's his birthday.
And so I'm just, because these are the final days of the month. Tomorrow's the last day of the month.
It is.
And I just really want to see that get fulfilled. And so anybody who's listening, you know.
Yeah, we're 55. We are $55 from that and $119 from knocking things out this evening.
Because you're not going to hear this type of radio too many other places. And the thing is, you don't have to, people call in, they don't have to agree with you. You hear people out, you know?
Oh, absolutely. That's what makes it, I mean, we have a standing rule. There are no right-wingers allowed here.
Well, yeah, well, who could tolerate that?
Said the guy, you know, who gets up and watches Washington Journal every morning. Yeah, okay.
Well, you know what? Come on. If somebody tells you there's a train wreck coming, you know you're going to goddamn go out there and watch. You can't help it. I'm just, it's like a cup of coffee in the morning. I'm like, I get outraged every morning. It's a jump start. But, you know, anyway, I'm just asking folks, you know, this is good radio and this is a good community and, you know, just stop by and you know, throw a couple coins in the jar when you can. That's all I'm saying. And have a good evening, okay?
All right, you take care, Todd. Talk to you later,
all right,
my friend.
All right.
Bye now. Thanks, Todd. That's very kind of you. And, yes, Steve has a $10 challenge on the table, which once it gets met, it'll take us down to $99. And then $99 will wipe out tonight. 55 $1 contributions knocks out Larry's challenge, and we will, and the Swede will be beaten. See? Yes. Cool. So, about 18 minutes past the hour, so yeah, hopefully we can knock down that $119 in the next 42 minutes or so. Can we? Well, if you want to help us do so, over at headonradionetwork.com, there's a tab called Contribute, and that's where that all takes place. If you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, just check that little box that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation. Okay? Okay. And, you know, don't hurt yourself. Don't do anything that'll put you in a bind. That's not what this is about. Just, and especially with the $1, with the $1 contributions, it makes a big deal. Because that gets more people involved with the process. But anybody can listen anywhere, anytime, and we never send a bill. Never, ever, ever. Meanwhile, back over to the Skype line where Punky is waiting to be to speak to us through his translator, Scott. Oh, Scott.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's happening?
Greetings from downtown Oz.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, or just east of Oz, I guess, since downtown is a mile or so that way. Anyway, this is going to be one of my little potpourri calls.
I don't really? You've converted to Roman Catholicism and we're going to deal with potpourri?
Oh, Lord knows. I used to be.
See, that pissed Punky off.
I was raised in that wretched organization.
I didn't say anything about wretchedness. Now, quit that.
Well, believe me, from one who was there in the 60s, that was the worst time to be a child who was also Roman Catholic, because the church was going through a few changes, what with the Second Vatican Council, okay? They were trying to, I don't know, it was sort of a paint job more than anything else to give the impression of having modernized the entire thing. Like, they turned the altar around so the priest would face the congregation, and they went from the Latin Mass to the English Mass. And then a few years later, they instituted the folk mass, you know, the guitar mass. And it was just so much happy horse shit.
It's there about in the mid to late 60s that they got all uppity about birth control and condoms and things like that. And that's still not, that's, and what, the vast majority of American Roman Catholics still think that that's a load of hooey?
Yeah. And the thing that got me as a youngster, even as a child, you know, like 8, 10 years old, when they instituted the new rule. See, the rule used to be that on special, what they called holy days of obligation, special holy days, basically, you were not to eat meat, and you never had meat on Friday.
On Friday, the priests have none.
There is that. Okay. Some of the nuns have none, if you know what I mean. But anyway, I would ponder in my little childlike head many moons ago the notion that, let's say, some schmuck who didn't get the memo ate the cheeseburger on the Friday before the meat on Friday is okay rule went into effect.
God.
What happened to that poor bastard?
Wait a minute. Are we talking about angels having barbecue on the head of a pin? I mean,
but this was drilled into you that everything was a hard and fast rule in the Holy Roman Catholic Church, except when they said that it wasn't. Okay? And that's the thing. Like George Carlin.
How can you keep up?
But yeah, exactly.
I mean, I can't. The calendar of the saints and the holy day cards and.
And then
in the chat room, I got VT Blom now going freelance. And Bob, stop telling us how to worship the desert ghosts. Wait a minute. Wait. Time out. Okay.
And at some point along the line, speaking of saints, they demoted some of the saints. One of them, I think, was Saint Christopher.
Well, what do you expect? They dug up a pope and threw him in the Tiber.
Well. But like George Carlin said, by eighth grade, we had all become doubters, you know? And I relate very strongly to that, having been brought up in that faith in the 60s, okay? And going to Catholic schools with the nuns and, one of the great early traumas of my Catholic childhood was in second grade when I witnessed a nun, an old, dried up, angry, prune-faced nun.
You left out Bitter.
Bitter, yeah. Whose name, honest to Christ on a cross, was Sister Tarsicius. Now,
well, of course
it was. I don't know who the fuck Saint Tarsicius was, okay?
I don't either, but I want to hear Sylvester the Cat say that. Sister Tarsicius.
Suffering succotash.
Suffering succotash, Sister Tarsicius.
Or Bullwinkle Moose, I think that was more of what I was doing just then. But anyway, it was around Christmas. Sister Tarsicius, whoever Saint Tarsicius was, he was more than likely, or she was more than likely, the patron saint of constantly manipulated, pissed off people.
Well, okay? I just saw a photograph. Oh dear, this is not going to end well, Scott. Tarsicius was a martyr. Tarsicius was a martyr. You know, fuck you.
Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a Tarsicius out of my head.
Again?
Nothing up my sleeve. Presto. Whoops.
A
different hat.
Tarfifiath was a martyr of the early... This according to Wikipedia. Of the early Christian church who lived in the 3rd century, the little that is known about him comes from a metrical inscription by Pope Damasus, who was pope in the second half of the 4th century. I can't make this shit up. There's a statue of him sort of laying down with his toga half off, and he's kind of prepubescent looking. And, well, so let's see. The only positive information concerning this Roman martyr is found in a poem composed in his honor by Pope Damasus, who compares him to the deacon St. Stephen and says that as Stephen was stoned by a crowd, so Tarfifiath, carrying the Blessed Sacrament, was attacked by a group and beaten to death. Nothing else definite is known concerning Tarfifiath, since Damasus compares him to Stephen. It may have been a deacon. However, a sixth... No, not you, Asa, not you, Gerald. Not that kind of deacon. However, a 6th century account makes him an acolyte, according to one version of the detailed legend that developed later. Tarfifiath was a young boy during one of the fierce 3rd century Roman persecutions, probably during the reign of Emperor Valerian. You know, you can take some Valerian root, it'll calm you down. One day, he was entrusted with the task of bringing the Eucharist to condemned Christians in prison. He preferred death at the hands of a mob rather than deliver them to the Blessed Sacrament, which he was carrying. Oh, fuck.
Now, the question now becomes, in regards to Pope Damasus, was he like instead a leg man or a tit man?
Because he was the predecessor of Pope Molasses.
Molasses.
I always wondered what they did with the rest of the mole. Going to hell for that, you know.
And Bishop Larry would say, "What vestments?" And Mo would say, "What do you mean, what vestments? The vestments we've been using for the past 20 years." Anyway, Jesus, God, I'm free associating all over the place. Punky is flying around in circles. He doesn't know.
Okay,
so
here's what Pope Damasus had to write. Insane gang pressed saintly Tarfifiath, who was carrying the sacraments of Christ, to display them to the profane, he preferred to be killed and give up his life rather than betray to rabid dogs the heavenly body. You know, I think there may be a little subtle symbology going on there. I mean, I'm not saying, just saying. They pressed him, you know.
Now, when you say they pressed him, is this like one-hour martinizing, or how does that work exactly?
Oh, I don't. You kind of got to look him up and see the statue, and if you look for images of Saint Tarfifiath there in on your web browser, I don't know. I'm just they're all just these little boys who look like, you know, the kind of little boys that, you know.
Well,
I mean,
I have a sense that Sister Tarfifiath, the namesake of the patron saint of whoever.
Yeah, because that was what this was. This, remember?
Yeah.
This is a song about Alice. No, yeah, go ahead.
She apparently knew nothing of this backstory, okay? And she had to be. You got to remember, I was in second grade, so I was not a good judge of how old people were, and it was difficult with a nun because in those days, before they changed their habits, so to speak, all that you could actually see were the hands and the faces of these women, you know, and she wore these rimless eyeglasses, okay, with the gold frames and no rims around the lenses. And they were Sisters of the Holy Cross. I don't know if you've ever encountered this group, but they had a big sort of heart-shaped paper plate sort of a thing that hung down from their neck. And then their entirety of their head was covered, with the exception of an oval cut out for their face. And then there was this sort of rectangular thing that sat over their brow, the top part of their brow, and then a cap, a black capped veil over their head and going down their back. And then to top the whole thing off was this large paper plate sort of thing standing on end that stuck up from this thing on their, this capped veil on their head. And when you're a child, oh, and they wore these gigantic wooden bead rosaries around their waist
that could double as bolos that could wrap around the ankles of an elephant and bring it down, yes.
Well, the cross was the size of a hot cross bun, and the beads on that thing, these were big-ass wooden beads, had to be 3/4 of an inch or thereabouts in diameter. I mean, in my adult years, roaming novelty and adult bookstores just for, you know, drunken shits and grins, I've seen anal beads that are not quite the size of the beads on this woman's
wow, rosary. You didn't know St. Tarsicius, okay?
St. Tarsicius was one kinky dude. okay, so here it is.
Yeah, so there's a joke out there, and the punchline's like, and the punchline is, yeah, I'm not a nun either. My name's Morty, and I'm on my way to a Halloween party. But we won't go there.
So imagine, and like a 7 or 8 year old kid in second grade, Christmas is approaching. The night before, my mother had read us this thing in like Family Circle or one of her women's magazines, a Christmas story.
Horrors for Children, something like that.
Well, I was so taken with it, I took it in to give to Sister Tarsicius so she would read it to the class, what with the Christmas holiday approaching. So this was in the morning, and she said she would do it that afternoon. Well, after lunch, I felt that it was incumbent upon me to remind her of her obligation to read it.
This is not
going to
end
afternoon.
Well, is it?
Well, turns out she had been sitting on the magazine. Okay, now there's a message in there somewhere. And she apparently had had a Yankee bean dinner for lunch.
Oh, no, you don't get to finish this. You just don't.
And she sat there and looked me straight in the eye and let fly a fart that was like ripping a fabric window shade the entire length of it.
You're going to fit.
It was like a motorboat off in the distance.
You know, I try to run a decent, serious, little, respectable radio program here.
And there was no discernible odor to it, with the exception of the faint trace of cashmere bouquet with little overtones.
Well, it's a holy sainted miracle then, isn't it?
With little overtones of salvatica. Okay. It was the most insane moment of my young life up to that point.
And see, and you want to know what makes this little community special?
You mean besides stories like this?
Yeah, you bring up Sister Tarsicius, so we have to go down the goddamn garden path of martyrdom to find out who Saint Tarsicius was, and all the way around the other side of the planet, I get a note from Robert and Oz that says, "Holy crap, I had the comic book of that." What's his name? Holding the Holy Sacrament to his chest as he's stoned to death, his dead hands only releasing the Holy Sacrament after his fellow Christians arise. God, that's 50 years ago, the shit they burned into my brain.
Amen. So.
And now you got, you know, the chat room is a bunch of goddamn incorrigibles, okay? We understand that, right? So,
no doubt.
Now we got a discussion about Saint Flatulence and nun farts in the chat room. And I got you to thank for it, Scott.
Well, it is my pleasure to serve you and the community.
Punky and I are going to have a talk.
Indeed. And I think you should with all deliberate speed. Well, I don't know how the hell I got onto that. I didn't call to talk about that, I'm sure. But then again, I did say it
would
be.
Well, but, you know, it's conversation radio, and I think you did call to talk about that, Scott. I really do. I think you did.
Well, you cannot make this stuff up. This would, I could do 10 minutes on stage at a comedy club just on Sister Tarsicius. Now, I don't know if we get laugh one, but certainly the former Catholics, or as I like to call, my mother always to her dying day said I was a lapsed Catholic and I would eventually come back into the fold. I like to think that I was a recovering Catholic and that I saw the error of my ways and what damage being affiliated with those people was doing to me. And so I'm totally in recovery. Hell, that whole experience ruined for me the notion of seeing men done up in formal wear or even penguins at a zoo. I mean, that's how traumatized I was by some of these nuns. And if you think Sister Tarsicius was a story to be told, my fifth grade math teacher, my hand to God, Sister Domitilla was my fifth grade math teacher.
I'm never going to feel. I talk about being a recovering Southern Baptist, and it was weird enough. But I got nothing on you people. I really don't.
This woman was the only nun in the Holy Cross Order that was allowed to wear an old leather habit. And
she wasn't.
And she rode a motorcycle. But only to mass.
You are stretching the bounds of credibility.
All right. Well, this part is true. We would do our.
Wait, I was willing to believe the leather habit and the motorcycle. I mean, come on.
Well, I may have copped out too soon then. We all did our math assignments, homework, in one of those composition books with the black and white marble swirl pattern on the front. And you couldn't rip out the pages because of the binding. They weren't like loose leaf or spiral bound. They were stitched in there, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, everybody remembers these composition books,
absolutely.
So you would do your homework, you would put the answers in that, and then she'd walk around the classroom, shriveled up old thing that she was. Her age was somewhere between 60 and death, okay? She didn't have crow's feet. From what little of her face you could see, she didn't have crow's feet.
Her age was measured in exponential notation. Is that what you're telling me?
She had mastodon track, okay, instead of crow's feet. But she armed only with a red pencil. She would walk up and down the rows. Our composition books would all be dutifully opened to that day's assignment answers. And she would look at them very quickly, scanning the page. And then she'd put either a big check mark, which was a fucking rarity for me, or she would put a giant X across the entire fucking page, which was my usual manner of marking or having been marked.
Can you tell me you had the same fun with math that I did?
Oh, God.
Not a big cipherer, are we?
My dad tried everything. Flashcards, everything that he could possibly do. Mnemonic, I think what those devices are to remember stuff for the multiplication tables, especially. I just could not get my head around that. But anyway, Sister Domitilla, she was universally despised, and I thought she was the worst until I got to eighth grade, and the math teacher there was Sister Agnes Alma, who looked for all the world, her face was the exact replica, minus the beard, the chin whiskers. She looked for all the world like the TV, the conservative TV talk host who was on independent stations in the late 60s, Alan Burke. And you can Google him, and if you get a picture of Alan Burke.
You know, you tell me these things, Scott, I'm just amazed that, you know, you're a productive member of society with a bird in San Diego.
No, wait a minute. Run through that, because I'm not sure I get... Yeah, I mean, I've been a lot of places and done a lot of things, over the years, and I've had done to me a lot of things.
No, but you're not just wandering Walmart parking lots screaming at the clouds. You've got every right.
Or voting Republican. You know, how did I come out the way that I did, given all of that? Okay? Well, that's a good question. That's a damn fine question. And I don't know. If there were a God around to thank, I would thank him or her. But these days, I'm not even sure of that anymore. I truly am not. I am grateful for all the wonderful things that exist for me in the world, and that I'm upright and above ground, and I have a cat and a bird who love me, and I love them. And I am never broke. I am always tantalizingly close to it. But for as far back as I can recall, I've never been broke. There's always been a little something, okay? And I am blessed beyond my capacity to receive it sometimes. So somehow it all works out. And I suppose that in order to be blessed, there must be one who bestows the blessing. But sometimes I think that stuff just happens. I think if you're open to it and you're as kind as you can manage, and you attempt to be a positive presence in the world, then positive stuff is going to happen for you. I don't mean to get real metaphysical, but that kind of is where I am. Despite all the adventures, and there have been many of them over these 62 years, it all seems to work out okay because, you know, I keep showing up with as positive an attitude as I can manage, even though it doesn't always sound like that sometimes. Does that make sense? Or am I just
under the circumstances, Scott, it makes perfect sense.
Okay, well, good. Good.
Yeah.
So I don't know where this leaves us, Bob. Should I just shut up now? Or?
Punky's in charge.
Yeah, Punky, by the way, was quite impressed that his name has been mentioned and that he got to hear Laurel's dog barking. He was very impressed by that. I had the speakers.
Did he cock his little cockatiel head? Kind of.
He sure did. He sure did. And he's used to cats, and he's used to the birds outdoors and all that. But dogs are a very interesting thing for Punky because his encounters with them, usually by way of sound or seeing them out the window, are very infrequent. So dogs are a source of curiosity to him, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Amazing.
And he's an especially big fan of Jingle Bells by the Singing Dogs.
Oh.
He rocks out to that. I don't know why.
Oh, he is a bird of taste and distinction.
Of course.
Well, damn, that was fun, Scott.
Well, I'm telling you, and yeah, that ain't the half of it. I could tell you stories.
No, but you know what? I try every day to learn something new.
So what have we learned?
And I love ancient history, and now I know about St. Tarsithius.
St. Tarsithius.
And let me tell you, as compared to dealing with Verizon and or Frontier, I'll take this little learning excursion any day of the week.
Well, maybe they need,
because you were the ones getting the red X on the page anyway.
Maybe these companies shouldn't have music on hold. They should have somebody like me just free associating my ass off as the customers wait. And who knows? It might be so good that when the customer rep comes on, they'll say, "Not now. This guy was right in the middle of something."
Yeah, put me back on hold.
Yeah.
Scott wasn't done yet. I wanted to know what happened to St. Tarsithius. Or Sister Tarsithius.
Sister Tarsithius sounds a little like...
It ain't every day you hear about cashmere farts.
That's right. Cashmere Bouquet was a body powder for ladies many, many moons ago.
Ooh, I'm betting they probably still make it somewhere.
Yeah.
Was that old lady perfume that would, like, choke a Komodo dragon?
Well, it was a powder, a body powder, that came in a pink can. It was like,
you know too much about this, Scott.
No, well, I'll tell you why. You've seen the gold bond powder.
Oh, absolutely.
In the plastic.
Yes.
Okay. It was that same shape, only smaller. It was made of metal, and it was pink. And you would twist the thing on top, and it would expose the little holes on top that you would sprinkle the powder out. And the reason I know this is my younger years were spent, a good number of them, of these years, were spent in the presence of my two elderly great-great-aunts who were sisters. Great-great-aunt Effie, who was born in around 1867, I believe, and her sister, great-great-aunt Emma, who was born in 1880. Now, how they got to be sisters, they're sort of the female equivalent of my younger brother and I. My younger brother, who's like the right-wing fascist, and I'm, you know, the total opposite of that. Aunt Effie was a tall, prim, proper, slender, Victorian-era kind of woman with a very straight-laced bearing and very prim, very proper, mostly serious, but she could let loose, you know, a little bit, hopefully not with the farts. Her sister, on the other hand, Aunt Emma, was the black sheep of the family going back with as many generations as you care to mention. My mother, my mother's mother, I mean, all of them frowned
upon the mother's 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 mother, yes.
Yeah. They all frowned on the attitudes and outlook of Aunt Emma. So I was with these women a lot of the time in my younger years, and I got a good deal of my own piss and vinegar from Aunt Emma, okay? And maybe some of it was tempered by the influence of Aunt F. But I'll have to send you the recipe, since the holidays are coming up, for Aunt F's pound cake recipe. Now, she was born around 1867. It was an old recipe when she was a little girl. So that gives you an idea how old it is. And I'll dig that up, and you fix a Aunt Effie's pound cake for your friends and family this
Does it get soaked holiday. In rum or anything?
No, I guess you could do that, but it is such perfection as is that you almost don't need...
Buttery, golden, dense, and wonderful.
Oh, God. It is like... It is dense. It is delicious. It is sweet. Serve a slice of it with a big dish of ice cream. Oh, Bob.
Yeah, the good stuff. Yeah.
Oh,
well, you know, talking about your ancient aunties reminds me of some of the auntie stories that we've had from Edward in Dallas. Hi, Edward. I've begged Edward for years to commit this stuff to writing because it is precious. Those were those were ladies of a different era.
Well, and the stories and things that they told. You've got to remember that I don't know who the presidents were when these two women were born. Aunt F died in 62, I think. She was like 95. Aunt Emma died in 75, and she was... I think she was 95 also, yeah. But the adventures and the memories and growing up just south of the D.C. area in the last part of the 19th century and living, in on Emma's case, three-quarters, literally, of the 20th century, just the sense of history. And this is one of the reasons I wish younger kids like myself had enough on the ball at the time to ask questions and to take an old reel-to-reel tape recorder and record stuff or write it down or whatever.
Living history, exactly.
Oh God, oral
and you
history.
And you tapped into something. I got a note from Jen in Australia. Oh, my God, remember Jean Nate after bath splash? That was my nun's. She said, that was my nun's thing.
Jean Nate.
Which, oh, yeah, and which leads to the question, who are nuns trying to smell purdy for? I mean, they're married to Jesus already. It's not like you can get a divorce.
Well, that is true, but, you know, it's all you must always do your best for the Lord.
Well, amen, I reckon.
But, anyway, some of that stuff I hadn't thought about for quite some time. And how the hell I'll have to play back the archive to find out how we veered off into Sister Tarsithia.
If you figure it out, you let me know, okay?
All right, well, I'm glad that you enjoyed it, and I hope the listeners did as well. And
oh, the Horn Family Community Congregation loves this stuff.
Well, and maybe that's part of my mission in life is to help people get in touch with stuff that they wouldn't ordinarily think about or stuff that they hadn't thought about in a good long while, and they derive some benefit, you know, when we... It's like Mr. Peabody and the Wayback Machine, you know?
Exactly.
With his boy Sherman. You know, the past is not a necessarily bad place all the time.
No, and oddly enough, Sherman and Mr. Peabody are teaching my granddaughter things. I was talking with my oldest daughter earlier today, and she was telling me about the report that my granddaughter is writing on Ponce de Leon. And I said, she knows he was an awful human being, right? And she said, "Yes, Dad, she knows." I said, "Good." She said, "We're not gonna do the Chinese slave laborers making Britney Spears T-shirts thing again and make anybody cry, are we?" Because that's my claim to fame. Because I did that, and I did it with fireworks too. And she's like, "Let her be a kid, Dad." Now, hey, you know, she's not on the phone. I'm not talking. No. Just make sure that she said she already knows, because she looked at me and said, "Weren't there already people living here, Mom?" And Mom said, "Well, yeah." She said, and so Ponce de Leon, you know, didn't survive the trip. And she said, "So is it any surprise that they killed him?" I'm like, "That's my baby."
Well, the cool thing about the Rocky and Bullwinkle and the Fractured Fairy Tales and Mr. Peabody and Sherman, the Jay Ward production company was genius in the sense that those cartoons.
Oh, played, there was wordplay. There was history. Yeah.
Oh, so many different levels.
And Sherman and Mr. Peabody always ended with an awful pun.
And Aesop's Fables and Edward Everett Horton narrating didn't he do the Fractured Fairy Tales?
Mm-hmm. Yep, beautiful.
Oh, God. But see, as a child, you didn't get all of the references, but you could grasp the silliness of it.
Oh, no, you didn't. No, right, and it's later on that it becomes even more appreciable. I mean, so we were talking about the Hoboken crash earlier today.
Yeah.
And I hate myself, because you know what the sum total and extent of my knowledge of Hoboken is?
Probably Frank Sinatra.
No, Bugs Bunny.
Oh, no.
Bugs Bunny is my entree to the world.
Okay. Well, I know Albuquerque.
And Albuquerque, same way. Only, yeah. There's the one cartoon where he rescues the penguin from the nasty people, And he endeavors to get, and so he gets the book, because he can read now, and he's flipping the penguin. Yeah, the penguin comes from Antarctica. And so he goes on this run, trying to save the penguin from being killed, gets him to Antarctica and says, "Here you go, kid, enjoy yourself." And the penguin starts crying little ice cubes, and it's just adorable. The penguin pulls out his card, because of course the penguin has a card, and it says, you know the whatever Pengy the penguin, I forget the penguin's name, it says, "The world's only juggling penguin born in captivity in Hoboken." at which Bugs screams, "Hoboken! Whoo, I'm dying again!" So, like I said, I'm going to hell. I hate myself. Because I'm sitting there, the alert pops up on my screen this morning, and it says train crash in Hoboken. And the first thing through my head, Scott,
it's Bugs Bunny's
is penguin. Hoboken? Whoo, I'm dying again. And I feel terrible about that. Because people got hurt. But, you know, I mean, it's just, it's imprinted. I can't help myself.
No.
Okay. Randy and PA's into the act now. Wait a minute. Randy, get it. Gene Nate, you've got yourself some hot cross nuns. You know, the little demons are just jumping on the bellows at this point. I don't even know if they're enjoying it anymore. Hot cross nuns. Oy. Scott, you and Punky have a lovely night. I got to wrap the program up.
All right, Bob. As always, it's been real.
It has that. Good night, Punky. Good night, Scott.
See ya.
Later. Yeah. Hey, good news. Larry's challenge is down to $48, courtesy of Graham and Jen, and their four cats, and then Mary Bell, and that takes it to $48. This is doable. Which takes the night's fundraising down to $113 to go, with a $10 challenge on the table, courtesy of Steve. $113 to go, and $4 to go on Steve's challenge. Which would take us down to 99. Let's call it. Let's feel good about those $4, and then that means $99 to go, and we'll cross our fingers between now and tomorrow evening. So, works for me. I hope it works for you. Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Jen tells me Hoboken is, it's. See, I even say it like Bugs. Hoboken! Hoboken is pizza, Greek food, the best damned corner bars, and New York City lights at night. Well, that sounds downright nice. How far is Hoboken from Weehawken? I get all historical about Weehawken. Yeah, yeah, and Jim's maiden auntie and the water test enema. Oh, my God. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, isn't family wonderful? It is. It is. So let's wrap up this here Thorn in the Side Thursday. Maybe I can declare victory by tomorrow night on Friday on the front porch. Or maybe, you know, Verizon will just steal some more of my precious finite life from me. You never know. From one to the next. Hey, thanks for your first ever call, Laurel. I appreciate it this evening. Hopefully there will be more to come. Thanks to everybody who jumped in this evening on fundraising. It never ceases to amaze and humble me. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Remember, the Save Coal River Mountain Rally is in Charleston at the DEP headquarters on October 17th. I'll be there. Maybe you'd like to be there. And hey, you know what? I'll even try to, for those of you who can't, I'll try to stream it live one way or the other. Okay? Because we have the capacity to do that. And isn't that cool? And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.